Hi, I'm Tessa Court, the CEO of Intelligence Bank. Welcome to Marketing Heroes, a podcast dedicated to our favorite marketers from around the world, hearing their stories, their views on the state of marketing, and their advice for professionals who aspire to transition from good to great. The podcast is presented by our very own Rob Weiss, VP of Marketing at Intelligence Bank.
We all love the garage to greatness stories of Apple, Google, PayPal, and YouTube. But few consider the investors that gambled on these ideas. While Steve Jobs, Sergey Brin, Larry Page, Elon Musk, and Larry Ellison are revered as geniuses, Don Valentine, Michael Moritz, Roelof Botha, and the team at Sequoia Capital rightly deserve veneration. Sequoia Capital has invested in several hundred companies since 1972. Including Apple, Google, Oracle, PayPal, Stripe, YouTube, Instagram, Yahoo, and WhatsApp. The combined current public market value for these companies is more than $1.4 trillion, which is equivalent to approximately 25% of NASDAQ. They have exited in more than 70 IPOs, and there have been more than 200 acquisitions. But more than money, they offer a partnership of expertise, experience, and connections. If you've got a great startup, you dream of meeting with Sequoia. And the person responsible for building Sequoia's global brand and helping to guide these budding unicorns is marketing partner and CMO Blair Shane. Prior to Sequoia, she was the CMO and associate dean at Stanford Grad School, CMO at the California Academy of Sciences, and enjoyed senior marketing leadership positions at Charles Schwab and General Mills. She holds an MBA from Stanford and a BA from Johns Hopkins. I'm delighted to welcome Blair Shane to the Marketing Heroes podcast. Hey, Blair.
Hey, Rob. Thank you so much for having me.
It's our absolute pleasure. Now, incredibly driven people with some of the most interesting ideas are banging on your door each day. Does Menlo Park sometimes feel like the center of the universe?
You know, the most important thing one can remember is it's not. That's one of the things that I try to hold on daily. Yeah. That ideas can come from anyone, anywhere, and sometimes you can get caught up in things here in the Valley, but it's really important to remember we are actually not the center of the universe.
Excellent. Now, you have this fascinating dual role of building Sequoia's brand, but also helping to define how partner companies present themselves to the world. So how do you juggle that?
You know, it's definitely one of the best jobs in the world. I think the first thing in terms of helping Sequoia build its business is to convey the humanity and approachability of the partnership. Yes, we've been in business for 40 years, and yes, performance and helping build the next generation of unicorns and dragons is at the forefront of what we do. But the reality is we do that best if we meet with companies when they're imperfect. So the number one thing I can do to help Sequoia is make sure that that founder down the street doesn't wait to come talk to us. And that can be conveyed in a number of different ways, whether it's me helping partners with their thought leadership or working on loyalty programs or acquisition programs with prospects. But the one thing I want to make clear to everybody in the audience is it's never too early to reach out to Sequoia. When it comes to the company building with individual companies, I would say the same thing goes. A company's benefit of working with Sequoia is they engage me and Jamie Bott, the human capital partner and the investor on their board early on any and all problems.
You've been at Sequoia for 5.5 years, which in tech years is probably 15 or more. Why did you join and what have been some of your major achievements?
You know, I joined because it's still my dream to be an entrepreneur, to be a CEO. And even though I both went to and worked at Stanford Graduate School of Business, fundraising in the startup ecosystem is not something you learn in business school. And I'm a consummate learner. So there's really no better place to learn technology, to learn how to fundraise, or learn how to be an exceptional CEO than at Sequoia. The other reason I joined, many people don't know, but Sequoia is really driven by what we call great causes. And that takes on two meanings. One, we're not just looking at any company to invest in. We want to invest in companies that will transform markets. So that's super exciting. We want to build market leaders that will endure. So that's one way that we call it a great cause. The second great cause is we only have a little bit under 200 limited partners, those people that invest in Sequoia. And our limited partners are almost entirely nonprofits, so universities and foundations. So even on a bad day at Sequoia, our conference rooms are named for Notre Dame, Stanford, Boston Children's Hospital. You're motivated because every time a company does well, we do well helping build an enduring company. Those returns go to fund scientific research or scholarships. So that's why I joined. In terms of successes, we're a pretty humble place, so it's hard to take credit for any single thing in the last 5.5 years. I think that also differentiates Sequoia. When you get one of us, you get all of us. The things that I'm most proud of are, certainly, I think before I got here, there was a gestalt of the brand. Everybody kind of said the same thing. I think now we're going to market much more in an integrated way. I think that's one. I think two, I built an incredible team that is able to help portfolio companies much more systematically and impactfully when it comes to finding lighthouse customers, launching launching their products and communications, et cetera. And the last thing that I'm proud of is in the last 5 years, I think we've really built a community of founders. When you get an investment from Sequoia, the real value to you, I would say, is three things. One, it's certainly the brand, the validation that we're choosing to want to partner with you and you're choosing to partner with us. The second thing is the team, the fact that you get that board member, but not just that board member, you get all the other investors at Sequoia, you get me as the marketing partner, you get that human capital partner, along with the 40 plus years of what we call tribal knowledge, the experience of the failures and the setbacks and the successes to help your company. And then the third thing that I don't think people really realize is you get this incredible network or community of fellow Sequoia founders, alumni. I think of it much like I did when I was at Stanford. When you join, you not only get the founders that are in the trenches experiencing the same challenges that you are today, but you get the networks of experts on pricing or marketing or building a sales organization. And then you also get all the alumni founders on to help you be more successful.
Does the list of alumni companies make it easier to sell marketing advice and encourage those founders to listen?
Oh, it's such a hard question. I mean, everybody thinks they're a marketer, which makes a CMO's job really tough at times. I would say at the earliest stages of a company, founders don't think they need marketing, but they do think they need a strong culture. And in some cases, they think they need a brand. And I think of that as marketing. A culture is something that you can leverage inside and outside the building, whether you're recruiting your target audience of employees or recruiting new customers. So I would say they think they need a culture at the beginning. Some think they need a brand, but it's really not until they plateau, that organic growth has run dry, that they realize that they need an integrated marketing plan, and then they are clamoring for advice.
That's fascinating. Now, you talked about the 5-minute journal. There was a great blog on your website. What is it exactly, and how has it helped you and your team stay focused?
Oh, it's interesting. So actually, the 5-minute journal is a tool that I personally use, and then there's elements of it that I apply to my team. So the 5-minute journal is something you can buy on the web. It basically has three components. It makes you start your day with appreciation. What are the three things that you're grateful for? The second thing it asks you is, what would make today great? So it makes you be intentional about the few things, both in your work life and your personal life, that you want to focus on and get done first, because that'll make or break your day. The last thing it asks you to do is it asks you to kind of list an affirmation statement. It says, I am. And for me, I usually manifest that. If I'm tired, I'll say, I am strong and awake or whatever, or I am confident in my pitch if I have a pitch coming up. So what do I do? So that 5-minute journal, you do that at the beginning of the day. And at the end of the day, when you go to bed, it asks you to reflect. So what were the things that made today great? And then it also has an element of learning. What would have made today better? So to focus on what you didn't do. So how do I apply this to my team? Mostly what the 5-minute journal does is it forces you to have context, appreciation, and prioritization. So the prioritization thing is what I bring to my team. And we have a Monday morning huddle. Everyone shares their one thing. It's the one thing in the week or the period that if they did nothing else, it would move the needle of the business most. Usually those one things are the hardest things to do, right? And we procrastinate them about it. So it makes us intentional about it. So anyway, I would say all in all, appreciation, focus, and then some kind of reflection or learning. That's what the 5-minute journal is about.
Excellent. I'm definitely going to check it out, and we'll share a link with our audience. Now, I know there's a lot goes on at Sequoia, but do you have an average day? And if so, what would that day look like?
You know, Rob, I wish I could say yes, but there's no average day. There is never an average day. And that's what makes working here so incredibly fun. I've, you know, gotten to work at Stanford and the Academy of Sciences and Schwab and General Mills, some incredible institutions. But why is a day never average at Sequoia? I would say that on a per capita basis, I am exposed to the smartest and most driven and hardworking people around. And that's not just my fellow partners, it's really the founders. And we have to match the founder's game every day. I think the other thing besides smart and driven and hardworking on a per capita basis, at least at Sequoia, we all are cut from a different cloth. The only thing that's required is that you have to bring a unique point of view to the table, but that also keeps it pretty interesting and never average.
Talk to me about the challenges of capturing the best ideas irrespective of their location. You quite rightly said that, you know, Menlo Park is not the center of the universe from an ideas perspective. So how do you go about that?
Our primary offices are in the US, China, and India. I think one of the secrets to our success is we offer the best of both the global integration of a partnership. So when a company from the US wants to enter China, there's that network or community in China to help them and vice versa. So that's the benefit of the globe. We also have principles of really maintaining decentralization. So investment decision-making is made in each market. There's no kind of centralized body that has to vet everything. So that allows us to move fast and capitalize on the ecosystem that is unique to that region. I think the challenging thing is ideas come from beyond India, China, the US, and Israel. And how do we capture those? We have folks that, you know, are in Latin America and in Europe on trips. And my goal is to make sure that we are the global recognized brand for that early stage founder, regardless of where you are. And somehow you will find us and we will meet with you again for your imperfect. But I think our secret is let's let the regions do their thing and let's focus centrally on the thing, only the things that need to be centralized. And that's basically culture and compliance and then maybe some big brand things that make sure the ties bind across the geos and that the founder experience is similar wherever you're meeting with a Sequoia partner.
Okay, so that's enough on the big picture. I want to learn about the micro, the tools and tactics you utilize with your team and how you manage your time. So let's start with hardware. What phone do you use and are you PC or Mac?
Yeah, I'm definitely a Mac and an iPhone girl.
Some of the tools and the tactics in terms of managing, you know, your time.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, my favorite tools are Google Docs, obviously, is a way for us to collaborate. Also Dropbox. Not just because it's a Sequoia company and incredible founder with Drew, but a tool that is just so incredibly useful. So I would say Google Docs and Dropbox, the 5-minute journal I mentioned, those are really the things that are, you know, that I use many hours every day to keep the team humming.
Excellent. And in terms of, you know, messaging and collaboration, do you use a sort of a chat tool, a Slack or similar?
Yeah, you know, there are aspects of Sequoia that use Slack, and we certainly do as an all-employee group. My team directly uses it less, but I'm a big proponent of it, and we use it actually for a number of our founder and affiliate. And then a number of my teammates use Trello, Yep. To keep track of key initiatives and progress on those, but really Google Docs and Dropbox primarily.
Fantastic. Now, are you a Sunday preparer, or do you wake early on a Monday to plan out your day and your week?
Well, I'm definitely a planner. I don't know if I'm a Sunday planner, but I'm definitely a planner, thinking ahead. I'm probably always one step ahead, which is mostly an okay thing, sometimes not a great thing when I should be in the moment. I'm also, I would say, an early riser. The best hours for me to work are between 5:30 in the morning and 9 a.m. If I can even avoid coming into the office until then, it's just that focus time. But really, I would say 5:30 to 7 at home, get the kids to school, get in the office. And I actually block the first hour of every day for no meetings and no email to get that critical thinking time in.
I love that. So how many direct reports do you have, and how would you describe your management style?
Good question. Right now I have 7 direct reports. I'd like to think that I hire functional leads that are more expert than I am at their specific function. I want them to be smarter, better, more current than I am on that function. Then what I would say, I try to do a few things. Hire super well, so they're better than I am at their function. I think 2, set clear goals up front. And sync on major initiatives also up front. I usually let them run with it unless it's a major initiative. And then if we sync up front and that I can give input early on, then I would say my job is to inspire, support, and really appreciate them. You can tell appreciation is a theme. But as long as they are better than I am at a function, we set clear goals, give input early. You know, my job is to remove our obstacles and inspire.
How do you keep abreast of the latest trends and tactics, aside from the great ideas that are banging on your door every day?
You know, that is a really tough one. So I love to read, but it's not always the latest trends that I focus my reading on. I would say my reading is more eclectic and focused on how I can be the best manager and marketer. So some of the things that I'm reading lately are Captain Class by Sam Walker, which actually looks at sports coaches and the lessons of like the most winning sports teams ever and what led to their winning. So I'm reading that. And then I'm also a big fan of biographies. So reading, I guess, the Notorious RBG is not an autobiography, but a biography. And then I'm reading a biography on Katharine Graham of the Washington Post. And then in terms of keeping abreast on current trends, the best thing for me is to meet with young people. So people on the front lines, you know, new in their careers, probably very specialized functions, and listening and getting to know them. And they always think that I'm mentoring them, and maybe I do provide something, but I always glean the best new functional insight and target audience insight by listening to them.
What advice would you give to a younger Blair Shane?
Wow, what a good question. I definitely know the advice I give the current or old Blair Shane, and that would be to move more slowly. A young Blair Shane, I think I would say, 1, go for it. Don't wait. I've dreamed about being an entrepreneur my entire life, and for various reasons, I never did it. And so it's still coming for me. That's still my goal, but I would say go for it. The second thing I would say is never stop learning. Approach every challenge, every opportunity curious. And as a learner, it makes the failures softer and it makes every day interesting. It's probably why no day at Sequoia is average for me, because I'm always learning something. And the third thing I would say is very old school. It's write thank you notes. Appreciation in a very specific way of the people or partners or colleagues that are helping you learn and be better. It makes a world of difference to thank them. And, you know, relationships are not transactional. So write thank you notes is my third thing.
Well, a very big thank you note from the team at Intelligence Bank on taking part in the Marketing Heroes podcast. And congratulations on your incredible success and the success of the business. And we wish you every success in your professional and personal life moving forward.
Thank you, Rob. It's been a complete pleasure. I look forward to talking to you soon.
Fantastic.
And as always, for more information on our great marketing operations platform, please visit intelligencebank.com.